Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum, presenting I Saw It, Francisco de Goya, Printmaker. This exhibition features all four of the Spanish artists' major print series in their entirety for the first time on the West Coast. Now on view. More at NortonSimon.org.
You have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes, too, when you donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.
Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Later this hour, I want to hear from you because we're going to talk with listeners whose family life changed dramatically during the pandemic and perhaps went from overscheduled or at least family schedules full of activities, from lessons to youth sports to you name it, to a much less hectic life as a result of everything being online and sports events canceled. If you're a member of a family who's experienced that dramatic change, is that something you look forward to, at least in part, taking with you into the post-pandemic era, a life perhaps less stressful, less heavily scheduled, and perhaps a bit slower paced than what you had pre-pandemic? That's coming up later this hour. But right now, we take a look this summer at what we might expect in the way of power outages undertaken by electricity providers to try and avoid the catastrophic wildfires that we've had here in Southern California. We, of course, are facing yet another drought year. And when the winds get high, that means electricity providers have to consider prophylactically shutting down power to avoid wildfires. Joining us to talk about what the projections are for this summer is Los Angeles Times energy reporter Sammy Roth. Sammy, great to have you with us today.
Hey, Larry. Happy to be here.
So what sorts of meetings are taking place now, or maybe have previously taken place, to try and figure out what the energy forecast looks like?
Well, I mean, it's really hard to forecast out these things. I mean, so much of it is weather dependent, and you know, how hot it's going to be and exactly how dry it's going to be is tough to know, you know, months in advance, because really the worst period for this stuff is most likely July, August, September. But we know it's dry. We're facing a record or close to record drought conditions right now. We know at some point we're going to get a heat wave. It's a big question whether it just affects California or it affects the entire Western United States, which is, the scenario where, we'd have, potential power shortages in addition to the wildfire issue. There are definitely lots of meetings happening, trying to anticipate every possibility and be prepared for, all manner of circumstances, which is challenging.
Sammy, on that issue of possible electricity shortages, have they found ways of making the grid more flexible to be able to shift power around to areas that are under particular weather conditions leading to a surge in usage?
Yeah, they're trying pretty hard on the flexibility aspect. So a couple of good things have happened since last summer. We've added a whole lot of batteries to the grid since then. So these are these, big lithium ion battery facilities or in individual homes as well, which are good for taking some of that solar power from the middle of the day when we've got too much of it at times and banking it for the evening. So we've got a lot more batteries than we did last summer. There have been upgrades made to natural gas-fired power plants so that they've added some capacity so that they could add some more juice in the evening. So that's controversial for environmental and climate change reasons, but it's something that's been done. And they've worked on things that were broken with the electricity markets last summer. So at times last year when we were facing these shortages, there was electricity getting exported from California from power plants here to other states, which probably something that you wouldn't want happening if you're a California. So they've done some changes to try to make sure that stuff doesn't happen again.
Well, one of the things I recall from last year, Sammy, is that we had this really weird weather pattern that didn't just affect California, but much of the West, and put is so that the temperatures were not cooling at night, that you had unprecedented demand in an unprecedentedly large part of the country. And I guess there's no way to project whether we're going to see, as the climate warms, something that would have been anomalous decades ago.
That's right. I mean, it's certainly something that seems like it's getting more likely. I mean, last summer we had a record August heat in California, and we had this event where, for, like you said, several days running, it was blazing hot, not just here, but in Arizona and in Nevada and in New Mexico and all over the place. And California has become really, really reliant on imported electricity from these other states. We have these ambitious renewable energy goals here, and we're sort of climbing up the ladder in terms of, you know, percentage of stuff that's not coming from fossil fuels. But at the same time, we're still getting about a quarter of our power, you know, typically from other states, and a lot of that is fossil fuel. The issue we saw last summer was that when everyone else was hot, they were using their own stuff, and we're less likely to be able to send it to us. So, I mean, if we get those types of conditions again, which, you know, super hard to predict, that's when we'd be really in danger of another shortage, even with some of the changes that have been made.
We're talking with Los Angeles Times energy reporter Sammy Roth, also with us from Stanford University's Woods Institute for the Environment, director of the Climate and Energy Policy Program, Michael Wara. Michael, thank you very much for being with us. Is there any way to get a sense of what kind of a summer we're looking at here in California?
Well, I think Sammy did a great job of summarizing the issues. You know, that there's a set of factors we can predict for wildfire season and a set we cannot. And everything that is predictable in advance is pointing toward greater risk, more danger. But, you know, our luck in the moment, you know, can break either against us or in our favor. And we'll just have to see how the weather develops, whether we get a series of, you know, extended offshore wind events that would mean more fire risk, more likely power shutoffs, more extensive power shutoffs. Countering against that, I think, is the fact that the utilities have been investing heavily for the last few years in being more targeted with their use of the power shutoff tool, so that they're blacking out fewer people that don't necessarily need to be blacked out. They've been kind of re-architecting their systems, adding switches, adding more kind of situational awareness so they can be more targeted. But of course, if the fuels are dry, which they seem like they're going to be very dry, and the weather is adverse over large parts of California, then the utilities don't really have much choice at this point but to turn off power.
One of the things that concerns me, Michael, is it's not just a drought here in California, but rainfall in the Rockies, I think, is the second lowest on record in April. So there, you're dealing with drought that's affected much of the American West, not just California, where we're kind of used to the, you know, boom and bust of rain cycles. But areas that where it's more consistent are seeing drought as well. And then you've got, of course, the question, and this I know is outside of your area, but having enough fire resources nationally to deal with potential large-scale fires in many different locations.
You know, the point you're making about a regional drought is a really important one. It affects potentially availability of fire resources. And we saw this, you know, the significance of having enough in the Kincade Fire in 2019, where this incredibly dangerous fire that, you know, was predicted by models to burn all the way to the Pacific Ocean was held before it destroyed Healdsburg and Windsor in Northern California. That's what can happen when you have enough resources. The Woolsey Fire in Southern California, which many of your listeners, I'm sure, remember, is what happens when you don't. You know, the resources were short on the day that the Woolsey Fire blew up, and that meant that fire did burn to the ocean and was incredibly destructive. And so, you know, this is another piece of the luck that we hope we have when we need the resources that they are available. And, you know, to return to the discussion that Sammy, you know, had of the, you know, kind of issues around power system reliability in the West, the other challenge this year is going to be less available hydro. You know, the water, many people, you know, because of the drought, there's a lot less water stored behind dams in California. And this is true also across the West. And now, you know, one of the resources we rely upon for kind of the evening power needs when the sun goes down is hydro. And so our gas-fired power plants are going to be even more important in and the batteries that we've deployed over the last year are going to be even more important in supporting reliability for the state of California.
Do you know here in Southern California, Michael, do we get much in the way of hydro-generated power?
Absolutely. You may remember the kind of heroic evacuations that occurred last year from Shaver Lake in the Creek Fire. There's a very substantial system that Southern California Edison built in the early 20th century that's quite important. And then, of course, also the dams from the Colorado
Hoover
provide, you know, the Hoover Dam provides significant electric power to Southern California as well.
Which my grandmother actually was the first woman to be hired by the office staff when it was under construction. We're taking your calls with your questions at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722. If you have questions for our guest, that's Michael Wara, Director of the Climate and Energy Policy Program at Stanford's Woods Institute for the Environment, where he's also Senior Research Scholar. And joining us from the Wall Street Journal, reporter Jim Carlton, who's just written about the drought here in California. His piece, Drought Imperils Economy in California's Farm Country, has some rather serious news that's disclosed, even in the case of almonds, which, of course, were planted by farmers as a way to try and invest on that higher return crop over a long period of time. Some are just fallowing those groves. Thanks so much for joining us, Jim. I didn't realize that the Central Valley had reached that state. Please give us a sense of what's going on.
Yeah. Hi, Larry. And thanks for bringing me on. The farmers themselves are somewhat of a state of shock. We just went through a debilitating four-year drought that ended in 2017, and in the Central Valley, as you said, they fallowed, you know, hundreds of thousands of acres. Then we got hit with another dry year last year. This year, our snowpack is down to like 4% as of like this week for this time of year, and that's because we had a very low snowpack, plus we had unusually warm temperatures in the high country. And so right now, I was just up in the northern part of the Central Valley up near Redding, and they're letting their older orchards go. It's a sad thing because they spend so much to, you know, it costs a lot of money to keep these trees going. And, you know, they're just really the pain is starting in farm country, but it's going to spread to the rest of the state. So I look at the farmer in California as kind of the canary in the coal mine. Like when you see the farmers in trouble on water, then you know that you know, it's going to be the counties and cities next, and that's what I'm a little bit worried about.
And I assume we're seeing the aquifer in the Central Valley. Those have not been replenished, right? So the level continues to drop there?
That's a huge problem, Larry, especially in the southern San Joaquin Valley. The Westlands Water District, they rely on water at a dam called the San Luis Reservoir, which is south of the Delta. And they are down to zero allocation this year. They go to groundwater, as you say, but the aquifer there is going down. There's a lot of subsidence. There's also farmers trying to buy water on the private market. There are some rice farmers up in Colusa County. They have taken some of their water allocations that they are still entitled to, and they're selling that on the open market. And it's like as much as $1,000 an acre foot now. And it's normally $100, so it's like up to 10 times higher for these farmers. So, yeah, I mean, like you say, almonds, they actually call it almonds up there. I learned that.
I've heard that.
They call it the almond up in the north of the northern part of the Central Valley. But the almonds, they're supposed to be a high cash crop, like you say, but not this year.
Wow. Very sorry to hear that. Again, if you have questions of our guests, we're at 866-893-KPECC. That's Jim Carlton, Wall Street Journal reporter, wrote a very interesting and concerning piece about the effects on ag here in California of the drought. Sammy Roth, energy reporter for the LA Times, question for you. I don't know if you have an answer to this, but it's from Jason, who tweets at AirTalk. How many MW hours, I guess that's megawatt hours of batteries, have actually been added in California since September of last year?
That's such a good question from Jason. I don't know the number off the top of my head. It's got to be, it's at least in the hundreds. I don't think it's over 1,000, although it might be. It's hundreds at least.
All right. Michael Wura, do you have any sense of that?
I actually believe that Sammy's right to say that it's over a gigawatt. And typically, this is in the statewide. I can't speak for the Southern California area. And typically, the batteries are 4 hour storage. So, you know, a 1 megawatt capacity battery, you know, a battery that could provide 4 megawatt hours of energy.
So
enough to ride through a tough evening.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. So that would be enough to take you through that period in the early evening when it's after dark, so you're not getting anything from solar, but it's still hot, that period until people start going to bed. And I guess that 4 hours would do that?
Yeah. The thing to realize is that the transition from, you know, we have something like 12 gigawatts of solar production in the state. So that's the magnitude of that's turning off at sundown, right, as the sun sets, and the production from natural gas-fired power plants and discharge from batteries is ramping up to meet the needs of California customers. And so, you know, 1,000 megawatts, a gigawatt sounds like a lot, but it's a big state. We got 40 million people, and on a hot day, it's still a very challenging operational situation that California ESO has done a good job of managing, but they're really it's a challenge that they are kind of at the cutting edge of in terms of integrating renewables into a very large electricity system.
You know, if we find ourselves in a summer where there is a loss of electricity, either because of shortages or because of need to shut down power lines because of wildfire fear, how do you see the state and utilities likely responding? You know, PG&E was hammered for what happened in 2019. Edison received tons of criticism last year. So if we end up with a bleak summer like that, plus we've got a recall election of the governor sometime presumably later this year, so this all becomes political.
Well, I would say that the utility's first priority is not to kill anyone with their systems. And everyone I speak with at PG&E and Edison and Sempra, San Diego Gas and Electric, you know, the first thing they'll say to you is they really want to avoid a situation where their systems ignite fires that result in life safety risk. Their second priority is reliability, you know, and trying the best they can to keep as many lights on as possible. And, you know, at times those two desires are in tension. And that's what makes it so hard to manage the combination of sort of climate change fueled fire risk and an aging electricity system. And it's something that the utilities are getting better at every year. I think they would be, well, I don't know if they would say this, but I'll say this as an outside observer, that they're still, you know, learning to be done and progress to be made in how they manage this challenge. But I think most observers would say that there has been progress, but it's hard to evaluate exactly where we are on the progression from, you know, the situation we were in 2017 to kind of, you know, new, stable, you know, optimal way of operating the grid.
All right. Michael, thank you for being with us. We appreciate it again. Stanford University at the Woods Institute for the Environment. He directs the Climate and Energy Policy Program and a senior research scholar at Woods. Jim Carlton, reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Excellent piece titled Drought Imperils Economy in California's Farm Country. Jim, thank you very much. And Sammy Roth, doing great job covering energy for the Los Angeles Times. Sammy, thank you so much. Speaking of the Journal, coming up, we'll have a colleague of Jim Carlton's, Vanessa Firmans, will be with us to talk about her recent piece, Bosses Still Aren't Sure Remote Workers Have Hustle. We'll talk about what it might mean for employees who continue to work at home, at least in part, and how they're perceived by their bosses. We'll be back in just 1 minute on Air Talk.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.